And we're very lucky to have Brian Daniels on the phone. Brian, can you hear us okay there?
Hello.
Hello, Brian, can you hear us?
James, it's not a very good line.
Okay.
I'm trying to hear you.
Okay. If we speak up, is that working?
Yes, there's still a lot of interference on the line. But let's see how we go.
Okay, brilliant. What we're going to do, Brian, is just have a word with you, please, if we can, about what you're going to be doing on the Isle of Wight very shortly, because you're an amazing guy. I only met you for the first time the other day, you've done a little bit of everything. I mean, you started off running your own recruitment agency. You ended up actually running a number of theatres in London, I think sort of three or four different theatres in London over the course of probably 20 years. And now you're doing a load of wonderful plays. You're putting them on all across the country about really important social issues. And the one thing you're coming to do on the Isle of Wight, I know, is a play all about dementia, early onset dementia, which I think you got involved in this. Not well, you got involved on the Isle of Wight in this through Sally Grills, didn't you?
Yes, it was originally Sally Grills had made contact with the Dementia UK, who support the Admiral Nursing Project. Admiral Nurses are to dementia sufferers.
Yeah.
What Macmillan Nurses are to cancer sufferers.
Yes.
So Dementia UK called me and asked if it was all right for them to put Sally in contact with me. So she gave me a call. We met up and she became a great supporter of trying to use the arts to promote the issues around early onset dementia and her own campaign for the island to raise funds for some Admiral Nurses. So we presented my play, Don't Leave Me Now, which explores the situation around the families of two people who have early onset dementia. We did it at the Key Arts Centre in Newport last winter to two full houses, and we're now bringing it back to the Ilman Baton Hospice in October.
It's going to be 29th of October, isn't it?
29th of October, yes, we're doing two performances to help raise funds and awareness of the marvellous work done at the Ilman Baton Hospice. And we will be having our five actors performing the play and the discussion after each performance. And we know from experience that people are very moved by the stories, because it really focuses on the people who care for those who are on the dementia pathway, rather than trying to, find, what somebody's kind of psyche is like once they're suffering from that condition. It's what happens to the families, really, that interests me.
How did you get involved in sort of people suffering with dementia in the first place?
Well, some years ago, I wrote another play, which is also coming to the island. We can talk about that later.
Yeah.
And one of the people who helped me with the research is called Professor Rachel Dixie.
Yeah.
And she's at Leeds University. And she told me, when she was helping me with the research, that her long-term partner had developed early-onset dementia.
Yeah.
And she'd been writing a journal about what it's like living with somebody with dementia. I read the journal, which I did.
Yeah.
And found it, beautifully written. And I said, there could be a play in this journal.
Yes.
And could I have a go at sort of starting to write it? And that's how it started. It's about 3 years ago now.
Yeah. And there have been sort of many sort of read-through productions of it, haven't there, which have sort of helped a lot of people, I think, get to understand a lot of things about dementia that they never knew before.
Yes, well, it was a piece of work in development, and originally it was with the West Yorkshire Playhouse in Leeds. We did original research and development and then invited audiences to see it. Then we did some in London, and all the time asking people to complete an evaluation so that the stories could be as authentic as possible, because there are two separate family units covered in the play, both inspired by real stories. And as we took the play to different venues and different audiences, it became stronger and more authentic.
Yes.
And we then felt ready to not to ask people to complete evaluations, because we knew the play really stood on its own 2 feet.
Yeah.
And can be used for, you know, training purposes as well as, well, sort of, I say entertainment purposes, because, you know, a play is entertainment, really. And well, there's lots of humour in the story, and which you can't lose sight of.
I mean, you I know, are very keen on using drama to change people's way of looking at things, or to affect their lives, or to actually empathise with people who have either the conditions that they see in the drama, or who've lived through those experiences.
Yes, for people to realise they're not entirely alone with whatever it is they're going through. You know, I had lunch a few weeks ago with a friend of mine, Dame Janet Sutherland.
Yeah.
Who's a known actress, very well-known actress. And I said, you know, I said, theatre's so hard, it's so difficult, it's labour-intensive, it costs a lot of money, and it's hard to get audiences to, you know, get out of their houses in the evening to go to a play. I said, why do we do it? And she said, I'll tell you why we do it, because the thing about theatre, people go, we're always trying to make sense of life and society and why we're here and what we're doing on this planet. And she said, theatre is a great way of us helping to understand that we're in the same predicament and to explore the whole range of human emotions. And I thought, that's it, actually. She really did put her finger on it.
Yeah.
And I feel that's to an extent what this play in particular does. It makes people realise they're not alone, that other people have been there before them. And there's something very cathartic about,
yes,
sharing those experiences.
No, I think it is wonderful when in a play you suddenly think, that's exactly how I feel, but nobody's ever been able to express it like that before.
Yeah, yes, it's the commonality of existence, isn't it?
Absolutely. But, I mean, the amazing thing about you, Brian, is that you've been through all different forms of drama. I mean, there's been this kind of sort of empathetic form of drama, but also you've been through pure entertainment, haven't you?
I have, yes.
And I've done you've worked with Eartha Kitt, Gloria Gaynor, David Soul, Boy George on the music side. And in fact, We've got a track I think you particularly like from Eartha Kitt coming up in a second, Just an Old-Fashioned Girl. Tell me how you worked with her.
Well, I used to have the Shaw Theatre in London on the Euston Road.
Yes.
And I created it into a concert venue, bringing artists from America who weren't seen very often in England. And I was always trying to think of who still had a following of people who audiences still wanted to see.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought Eartha Kitt hadn't been to England for quite some time, and she was getting on in years. She was in remission from cancer. And she'd been doing a show at the Carlisle Club in New York, the Carlisle Hotel, which is a famous cabaret venue.
Yeah.
And the publicity and the reviews were marvellous. They looked fantastic. You know, she looked like a young woman in a dress with a, you know, slit down the side, and you know, just looked marvellous.
Because she'd been Catwoman, hadn't she?
She'd been Catwoman, yeah, she'd done all kinds of things. So I approached her through her agents who were in Los Angeles, and I set up the deal for her to do a week of concerts at the Shaw Theatre.
Yeah.
And we put her on a plane. She arrived in the early morning, and she came into the venue, and she looked just like a little old lady. she looked nothing at all like all the publicity. Oh, God. You know, in 3 hours, she's got to do all these, you know, all the television shows that you've got to do to, you know, promote a concert. And I thought, how is she ever going to look anything like she looks on the photograph? So, but fortunately, I'd paid for the entourage, which was the makeup man and the wig man, to come. and you wouldn't believe it. You know, in 3 hours, she looked absolutely fantastic,
just like
the pictures. And she performed on the stage. You know, we had to put an extra performance on. She was so popular. The tickets were £60 each. And this is going back about 7 years.
Yeah.
And she was just outstanding.
That's extraordinary,
and, you know,
isn't it?
There's something called Doctor Theatre.
Yeah.
Whatever you're suffering from, it goes away when you step foot on that stage. and she did it. And not only that, after every performance, she would come with me and would sit at the front of the foyer of the theatre, and she would sign anything that was put in front of her. because all the fans, everybody wanted to meet her, to shake her hand, to tell her the stories, and she was absolutely wonderful. So that's why, you know, she she's sadly died since, but she does hold a very special place in my heart. So I thought it would be lovely to play a track from the Great Eartha Kitt.
Let's listen to her here now. It's Just an Old Fashioned Girl. If you could stay with us for the next 3 minutes, if everything goes blank, we'll still be here, because we'd love to talk to you about Where's Your Mama Gone, which is another of your plays. But we'll listen to Eartha Kitt first.
All right, for sure.
Just an old-fashioned girl with an old-fashioned mind. Not sophisticated, I'm the plain and simple kind. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire. I'd like a plain, simple car, a series Cadillac, long enough to have a bowling alley in the back. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire. I'll stay weaving at my loom, be no trouble to my groom, if he'll keep the piles of money mounting. In our cottage there will be a soundproof nursery, not to wake the baby while I'm counting. I like the old-fashioned flowers, violets are for me, have them made in diamonds by the man at Tiffany. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire. I'm just a pilgrim at heart, oh so pure and genteel. Me in Las Vegas when I'm at the spinning wheel. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire. I'll ask for such simple things when my birthday occurs, two apartment buildings that are labeled hers and hers. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire. I like Chopin and Bizet and the songs of yesterday, string quartets and Polynesian carols. But the music that excels is the sound of oil wells as they slurp, slurp, slurp into the barrels. My little home will be quaint as an old parasol, and instead of carpets, I'll have money wall to wall. I want an old-fashioned house with an old-fashioned fence and an old-fashioned millionaire.
Brian, are you still there?
Hello.
Well, we just had Eartha Kitt there.
It was a long one, wasn't it?
It was a long one. It was a fantastic one. And the great thing about Eartha Kitt is she must have launched about 1,000 drag acts with that song, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. And yeah, she had a big gay following. And one guy even came up to me and he kind of opened his shirt and he said, please tattoo my chest, do your signature on my chest.
No, the trouble is, if you had an old fashioned house and an old fashioned fence, you'd probably be an old fashioned millionaire if you're in Battersea with a two up, two down, wouldn't you, these days? I think she needs an old fashioned billionaire these days.
Yes. Inflation has had an effect, but poor Eartha, she'll never know.
Now, what we'd love to do is talk to you about another play that's coming to the island. We just talked about Don't Leave Me Now, which is about dementia, and as we said, there's going to be a read-through at the hospice on the 29th of October, and I think the full production is going to be on at the New Theatre Royal Portsmouth in spring, isn't it?
It's going to open at the New Theatre Royal in Portsmouth, and then it'll tour. That's just being set up at the moment, and then, of course, that will be a fully staged production. But it does work so well, just as the reading with the five actors, because you feel very close to the audience. And most of the actors have had somebody in their own families who suffered from dementia. so they relate extremely well to the story.
But what we're going to do with Don't Leave Me Now is, as it gets sort of nearer to the time, we'll give people details of how to get in touch with the hospice so that they can come to the read through, and obviously when it comes on in Portsmouth, we'll let listeners know when that's going to happen. The other one, Where's Your Mama Gone, was originally, I think, shown at your theatre in London, the New End Theatre, is that right?
Yes, well, before then, actually, it did a six-week run in Leeds, in Yorkshire.
Where it was originally sort of, well, where it was set, really.
Yeah, that's right, because it was originally based on the family of the first victim of Peter Sutcliffe, who was known as the Yorkshire Ripper. And I know he was incarcerated at on the Isle of Wight at Parkhurst.
Yeah.
For a number of years. I believe he's in Broadmoor now.
Yeah.
But certainly in Yorkshire, he murdered 13 women and left 7 other women for dead. It was a terrible time in the mid-1970s.
Yeah.
And his first victim was a woman called Wilma McCann, who was murdered when she was 28, leaving behind 4 children, 3 girls and a boy. They were all under 6 years old. And when he was 40, the boy, Richard, wrote a book called Just a Boy, about what had happened to him and his sisters after their mother had been murdered. And I sort of took that as an inspiration to write a play inspired by their lives, but not the actual story of their lives, but elements of it.
Mm.
And also about the effect on a family when something like that occurs, you know, when suddenly somebody is murdered and you're already a family who are struggling, you know, you're on the breadline. How do you survive and how do you make anything of your life after that when you know, you already seem to be doomed?
Yes.
So I wrote that play, Where's Your Mama Gone? And I got a grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund, because one thing that did happen to those kids is they spent some time in care.
Yeah.
And we wanted to look at what we call heritage loss in looked after children.
Yes.
So these are people who have spent any period of their lives at all in foster care, or having been adopted, or brought up by people other than their birth parents.
Yes.
It's what else do you lose apart from being brought up by your real parents? And it can be things like, you know, religion, ethnicity, food, you know, different kind of food that the family who are bringing you up would have, you know, different from the perhaps what your own family might have been. Geography, you know, moving from place to place so that you lose touch with different neighbourhoods. So we did an exhibition around the original production, funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund, on heritage loss in looked after children.
Yeah.
Anyway, then it moved, the play moved to London. It did 4 weeks in London at Yes, My Theatre, the New End Theatre in Hampstead. And then recently there was a revival in London at a theatre called the Hen and Chickens. And we are doing some additional performances in October. And I'd like to bring it to Key Arts Centre on Wednesday the 21st of October.
Well, we'd love you to bring it.
For performance.
Is there anything we can do to persuade them to bring it? Because it sounds like it'll be fantastic.
Well, the Key Arts Centre will certainly take it. I would just like enough people. I want to fill 160 seats. And I've spoken to the social services, the children's services on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
Who have said they think they could guarantee that they could bring 40
yes.
people
yeah.
to see it. Because that week is National Care Leavers Week.
Yeah.
And it would be very important, really, to sort of have these issues explored on stage. So, yes, I would like to think that I could have another 100 people so we can fill the Key Arts Theatre there, because it's an important theatre for the island and it deserves to be full.
Exactly.
And people, you know, should, you know, kind of make the effort to come and see something that is a bit challenging and is a bit more like real life than pure escapism. But I understand if people don't, but we would like them to.
Well, we'll do our darndest to make sure that people will come to that, and we'll certainly be there.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be at 7 o'clock on the 21st.
7 o'clock on the 21st of October. Okay, well, yeah. Again, we will do all we can nearer the time to make sure people are aware that that's going to be on.
Which is great.
What else have you got in the pipeline, Brian? I mean, you've sort of owned so many theatres, you've put on so many plays. What else are you doing now?
Yes, well, I'm just being commissioned to write a new play about children who have been abused.
Yeah.
And it's based on the adult testimonies, so people who are now perhaps in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s,
yeah,
who have had experience of having been abused and the trauma that that's created and how it's affected them in their lives. So I've got a major firm of lawyers who are about to commission me to do that, and they specialise in just that area of, you know, personal injury. Abuse cases, personal injury cases, litigation, that sort of thing.
It'd probably be very harrowing for people to watch, but also it's probably much needed in terms of, you know, getting them to talk about their experiences.
Well, I think, you know, one would be amazed at the number of people who have been or claim to have been abused physically or sexually, and how that affects them in later life. And I mean, I see this being very much, you know, talking to a lot of people, doing the research, and then, you know, writing the play, not about directly based on any of the stories, but, you know, elements of people's stories. And I think, you know, in the light of the Jimmy Savile business, you know, a few plays have been written about Jimmy Savile, but I don't want to do that kind of play, you know, because I don't want to write about a celebrity abuser, as it were.
Yeah.
I want to write about the real stories and how people have found that it's affected their relationships and their working prospects, you know, their mental health, all those sorts of things.
Well, good luck with that. I mean, we've got...
If anybody wants to share any of those, their own personal stories with me, I'd be very happy to talk to anybody.
Well, I think they can get in touch with you at BRDAN, short for Brian Daniels, obviously, at iCloud.com.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can email me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, fantastic, Brian. Well, we look forward to talking to you later in the year about Don't Leave Me Now and Where's Your Mama Gone? And good luck with everything that you're doing at the moment. It's been fantastic talking to you. Thanks very much.
You.
And thanks for that story about Eartha Kitt as well. And let's keep in touch. And later in the year...
There are lots of stories, actually. And I think somebody wants me to give a talk on the island about... Well, one of the talks I do is about Backstage with the Stars. So there are lots of stories about the people I've worked with, you know, Eartha Kitt, Shirley Bassey, Liza Minnelli, you know, Judi Dench. She goes on and on and on.
Well, so
I think I'm doing that for a charity later in the year.
When you do, we'll tell our listeners about it, because we'd love to be there as well.
Great. Well, good luck with all you're doing with Vectis Radio as well.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thanks very much. We'll talk to you later in the year, but in the meantime, best of luck, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, James. All the best.
Cheers. Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.